I was going to explain this book, Tangena Kilimbo, in a very rough terms, because we have to get through the whole thing. So I'm going to go through it sort of in a summarial way. So we're going to start, if you don't mind. Generally speak, we're going to go over the meaning of the name, and then the great, incomparable, wonderful Desongkhapa taught many texts, up to 18 volumes of text, 18 total volumes of text, and among all those wonderful teachings, incredible teachings, if you took out the very essence of them, it would be this book, and that's why the name of the book is Essence. Ning, Ning means essence. So the very beginning of the book, which is on page one, probably. Page one, which is this page, looks like that. Okay. The very first line says Namo Guru Manju Gokhaya, which means I bow down to my Lama Manjushri. And he says, in general, this is similar to the translator's prostration at the beginning of the great books that were translated from Sanskrit. And even though this book is composed by a Tibetan, and there was no need to translate it, Desongkhapa has gone ahead and followed the custom of putting a translator's obeisance at the beginning. And that indicates that this book is very much in keeping with the original Sanskrit text, that Desongkhapa's viewpoints and Desongkhapa's writings are very much in keeping with the original books from India. Desongkhapa is bowing down. Namo is a short for namas, meaning to bow down. Guru means lama, and Manju Gokhaya means to Manjushri. And what he's saying here is that generally speaking, Desongkhapa himself is an emanation of Manjushri. So Desongkhapa is Manjushri in the form of a human being. He emanated, or he pretended to be going to Manjushri for teachings. So his lama is supposed to be Manjushri. So just sort of by pretend, he bowed down to Manjushri. But, you know, then one level he took teachings directly from Manjushri. At another level, he is Manjushri. Then the following verses are all a lot of prostrations. Each verse is a prostration. The first prostration is to Shakyamuni Buddha himself. The next prostration is to Manjushri himself. And then we go down to the holders of the lineage from Manjushri, which are called innovators. Shingda Soje means innovator. So then the two great innovators, meaning the innovator of the Madhyamika, which is Sangha, Arya Nagarjuna, and then the innovator of the mind-only school, which is the Sangha. And then the holders of the lineages of those two innovators. Then he bows down to the holders of the lineages of the two great innovators in this planet. And that's the meaning of the prostration that comes next.
我今天他今天嘛是自己，他是自己也讲过一个的。那个昨天我们讲的时候，今天嘛自己的，从阿太伊拉的上课，我是跟那第一天的时候，自己跟阿太伊拉的上课了，是跟那第二天。First
eight lines are prostration to Shakyamuni Buddha.
我不行，他今天亲自定的，现在爸爸和陈师兄为了这些事情，自己也都觉得起了亏待，他那些地方多了，然后强迫广播当，今天讲病啊，你呢？Then
the next verse is actually a prostration to both the Manjushri and to Maitreya, and the next, that's the next four lines. The next four lines are prostrations to the two innovators, which are Nagarjuna and Asanga.
Asanga.
Then we're on to the we're down to the fifth line of page two, and he's going fast, okay, and that's okay. And those are prostrations to the holders of the systems of the two great innovators, the lamas of the lineage of the two great innovators. So now I'm going to go down in a summarial way because we don't have time to actually go through the wording of each of all the
books.
Jisukapa goes through a long list of non-Buddhist deities, you know, great beings of the Hindu tradition. And the reason he's doing so is that at the end he says, even all of these beings pay obeisance, pay homage to the speaker of this book, to the Buddha and to the lamas of the lineage. So it's just to show that it must be a very important book if even the gods of the Hindu tradition are bowing down to the person who spoke its contents.
我听的是，但对地中海吧，对他那阿拉伯人，他以前说他往这边阿拉伯人那边去，去了吧，就是去南极阿拉伯，他往这边阿拉伯，他来地中海的地方那边去，他往这边。The
word "daejung," which means "daejung nei"
那边。哦，地中海的话，你过来了，地中海的过来了。那是。我那么古人嘛都夸一下去，他地中海了现在阿拉伯，我。
Now we're back to page one, right under the box. Okay, "daejung" means a source of happiness. And it's a sort, it's a name for Indra, Wangsu.
What is it? Kurala Dejung said that Karazana, but Wenju in the Tangwenju said, I mean, Kurala Luju, you are one. Luju could now let that Ham Oman Laden, and Tankarazanaranzu, I do sort of chain, Tinny, Chabin, Chen, Jawa Juma Inza, Ku Chan, Dejung said, Chicta, yeah, how long did they tell you that on the Mikangai, Kurangi?
그런데 word "daejung," now he's going backward by word. "Daejung" means "daejung" name means source of bliss, and this is a name. I think it's Chakra. You know, look at that. I think the name is Chakra. It's the lord of the gods, the head of the gods. Okay, and his name is source of bliss for two reasons. One way you can say his tantric consort, or his consort, is the farm named Uma. There's a deity named Uma, and he sort of engages in sort of like a tantric relationship with her, and so in that sense he can be called source of bliss because he's getting bliss from his source of bliss, which is his consort. But from the other point of view, you could say his name is source of bliss because he's the kind of being that the minute you lay eyes on him. You know, there's people like that, but the minute you lay your eyes on them, you like them, you feel happy about them, they're attracted to you. So that's another reason why Chakra is called source of bliss, because anytime you lay your eyes on them, you get this feeling from them.
대체 다 찔러신 세리 예진 딩하라도 하양고 통바다 예진 세요 때 찔러신 찔러신도 호랑 쉬엄바지 와로 하나도 다 다이서지 와로 때 랑부치 바 가르소랑 하나도 찐던 다 랑부치 다 가르 다 가르 가르보 텐데지 그 고침부지 여도 고 찐던 다 와진다 고 찔러신도 다 가르도 가르소 냥냥아 소라 권다
All these words are like expressions from ancient classical poetry of Sanskrit, and these are like nicknames that are given in classical poetry to these beings, these deities. The next one is called, in Tibetan it's called Gyajin. Do you know that Sanskrit? Is that Sanskrit? Well, I'll look it up. I'll look up the Sanskrit. I used to know it. Anyway, it means 100 gifts. And his name is Chinlashin. Chinlashin means riding on a cloud. And the point here is that he has a mighty elephant on which he rides. That elephant is huge, that elephant is white. And so from that sense, he's riding on the cloud, meaning he's riding on this huge elephant that's big and white. The next, Serkinyal means golden womb. And it refers to Brahma, which is a deity called Brahma. And he is said to have come out of a golden egg, so he's called the golden womb. So he was born out of a golden egg, so he's called golden womb. Two ways of explaining. The next one refers to a deity called Garabwangchuk, which is some kind of a fierce deity in this world. These are all worldly deities. This calls him the Lord of those with no body. And the meaning of that, he says, there's several ways to explain it, but generally there are three realms, desire realm, form realm, formless realm. In the form realm, people have extraordinary bodies, these big, strong, healthy bodies like Michael, you know, comes from America, and this big body, you know. And so people in the form realm have these big, huge bodies, and then compared to them, you could say that people in the desire realm don't have any bodies at all. So Lu Mei means no body, means he's the lord of those with no bodies, and Garabwangchuk is the deity that's sort of in charge of the desire realm, the worldly deity that kind of has control in the desire realm. So he's called the lord of those that don't, by comparison, don't have any bodies.
What did you say? That Taku Tosejo, the Chamju, the Chamju, the Taku Tosejo, the Yangama Koran, the Takar for Koran, the Logi, Nama Chungjung Gan, and Koran Medochi, one of the Medochi, Tinit Tuxin, Togo, and I've been singing to Rueta, the Taku Tosidan, Chigda, Chigla Horan, Tijiara, Tangar, Chumajara, Imajara, T. Hamacha Demas, Tiji, the Koran, the Lion, the Chamju, the Choba Puachi, and the Chamju Supuchimbuche, and Lamacha Demas, Manuva, the Medo Suki, the Dukia, you are the day or Madoche, then deliver your child. She has a tug with doors, so I said to all, she has a tug with the Medo to send it, and she has a tug with you, Nala.
Again, these are all stories from the original sources of poetry or poetic, classical poeticism about these deities. And the next deity is called like a belly belt. Tagu means like a belt or a string, and Tho means belly. And there are two explanations of this one as well. One is that when he was a boy, this deity, whose name is Kyamjuk in Tibetan, okay? I have to look it up in Sanskrit. Kyaba Machung, like Kyamjuk. And when he was a boy, he would wear a garland of flowers around his waist. And he liked to walk around with this garland of like a belt of flowers. And the other explanation is that he has his consort or his wife is a being named Changden, and she is his. In Tibetan, the word for wife is little one, and so it means comparatively she was quite shorter than him. So one day she made a garland of roses for him, flowers for him, and she wanted to put it around his neck, but he's like 8 feet tall, and she's like 4 feet tall. So she went as far as she could and got it around his waist. like she held it up and put it around his waist. So those are two explanations of why he's called belly, you know, like belt around the belly or something like that.
What did it is? That tezu dizu jidan dukmache. That dine tere. That pagu tolo so sena tripping aru che robas. That tela so bi jidan jidemil tripping samangbu jo aru batan. वो तीसरी जान था खर्चे तो लंबे घरों छे तो लंबे जिंगलम की जान से कांग्यू को सिर्फ कांग्यू को सिर्फ वासन ये जम लेने जी को दिखे तुम ये मेरा सिर्फ तुम मत तो अरे निम्न मिजी सिंह पेजर निम्न मिजी सिंह बंदा घरों तो सिंबु मिजी से बुझ गया मारा प्लाट्टा こともたくとこだんこらん言うてんじゃろわ。そんだからとじ言うてんじ。とじ言うてんこともたくとこらんとべしぶじ言うてんちんぶにさんなや。ていてねてべにめみげなにし。からそうれ言うてんきちゃねれば。だけどろじょんきちゃね。こらんとまからそうれてすよれてからそう2番目やばじすよれ。そういえばいいんだね。とばさんじ言うてんだろ。こらんとくしゃぶちねや。いやね。やばじからそう すぐにカルソルを投票でだ。コランドの中弁、指摘大事をあるわからず、演説し。これ、お、手続きにはトバさんに言ってみるんで、ギシャブルチャンスやけど。チャンスやごい、事前もカルセナ、絶不遅延、トバさんに言ってみるんで、ぐっちぐっちびぐっちんぎちゃんせやわ。あれ。コランドの演説も言うさまれて、いないやん。トバさんに言ってみるんで、ぐっちぐっちびぐっちんぎちゃんせやわ。あれ。コランドの演説も言うさまれて、いないやん。トバさんに言ってみるんで、ぐっちぐっちびぐっちんぎちゃんせやわ。あれ。コランドの演説も言うさまれて、いないやん。トバさんに言ってみるんで、ぐっちぐっちびぐっちんぎちゃんせやわ。あれ。コランドの演説も言うさまれて、いないやん。トバさんに言ってみるんで、ぐっちぐっちびぐっちんぎちゃんせや 통화 파인 파세 파인 파지 지단 도와선 요즘 된 데는 알아 민 지지게 착지를 파티지게 아니 파인다 아니 파인 파자
these are going back to the end of the second line where it says sipa sina sina dabingwana chedope in the world they are famed. Their fame spreads with the roar of a conquering lion. Okay, these deities, these worldly deities, Lombegina and Kikyangiku, and their bodies are like having Napoleonic delusions. Okay, that's a good way to talk about that. Like they think they're big stuff. Okay, and so they are like dancing, and they're like showing themselves to be great beings. You know, like taking poses of great beings. But then when they see the body, when they lay their eyes on the body of Lord Buddha. Then at that very instant, they become, their glory and dignity becomes like, Nyingmyen Myekyen means like a firefly that you put out in the sunlight. So Geshe-la says, at night, if you see a firefly flying around, you can pick up the light because it's dark and you see this tiny spark of light flying around. But if you, during the daytime, if you put them out and set them next to the sun, then that's the amount of dignity they have when you try to compare them to Lord Buddha. And he says, it's not so much that they lose their dignity or they lose their glory in, by comparison to Lord Buddha's body, but these beings have suddenly become aware of Lord Buddha's holy characteristics, his holy fine spiritual qualities. So they've just become aware of Lord Buddha's, the state of Lord Buddha's omniscience and his mind. So it's not so much they're comparing body to body, it's that it's a metaphor for comparing their mind to his mind, and his mind is omniscient, extraordinary, sees all the things at one time, and compared to that sun, they are like a firefly flying. And so, almost involuntarily, they are forced to put the top of their head, which in India is the holiest part of your body, this is the important part of your body, they are like impelled involuntarily to throw their heads down and get down on the ground with their face down in the dirt and put their head on Lord Buddha's feet. This indicates the glory of Lord Buddha's mind compared to them. And then he's called Tubang, which is the Shakyamuni. Thayitha means among all the gods, he's the god of the gods. So Thayitha means god of gods. So among all the gods, he's like the god of the gods by comparison. But mainly talking about the quality of his omniscience.
え、治療を行うとだってな、インディで治療を、ハマンボジアで、現代と学ばせ、実際にやくしゃ違うとせね、見せこそ重要があるからですね。あ、ディリクトマンチョをフランスと大転じせなめのこ、治療をはたじてせやね。おでとりてマンチョをりてた、フランス路地マンチョを路地ちなめて転じ、てじやろ。おでとりてこぞの順にとろ、こぞちょんとね。はじてとね。え、ちょんにそらしげあれ。で、インディさん、こぞたがらとことも試写。
When he says Dao, the last phrase there is, I bow down to Lord Buddha. And Lord Buddha now, Geshe-la is saying that if you think about the quality of those high beings, they are representing, in a way, their religions. Each one of them represents one of the great Hindu religions. So as being the representative of those religions, they are like the king of all the writers and all the teachers that have ever lived of those religions. And by extension, all the writings that those great scholars and great religious teachers have written. So from that point of view, when they talk about the deities, they're really talking about the great proponents of these religions, which is talking about the writings of the great proponents of those religions. And if you compare those writings to the speech of Lord Buddha, to the writings of Lord Buddha, then there's the point here is that there's no comparison, that also is like the sun compared to a firefly. So when he bows down here, when Jetsun Kapa bows down, he's really bowing down to the teachings of the Buddha, which teach you in an accurate way the things you should do, and teaches you in an accurate way what things you shouldn't do with your life. Really, we're bowing down to that quality of Lord Buddha, that he has able to teach you accurately what you should do with your life and what you shouldn't do with your life. And in that way, the real meaning of prostration here is prostrating to the greatest single quality of an enlightened being, which is that they teach us in a way we can relate to, that we can learn. You may wonder why Jetsun Kapa is concentrating on doing his obeisance or making his homage to this speech of the Buddha. Generally speaking, you can't look at all the high qualities of an enlightened being and say, this quality is better than that quality, or I like this one better than that one, or something like that. They all have this quality of being limitless. But if you really check, then the state of the Buddha's body, the body itself, the fact that it is adorned with those various marks and things like that, that in itself is not a great benefit to us. It's extraordinary, it's incredible, but in itself it doesn't do us much good. If you think about the Buddha's state of mind, that's something we can't even perceive. So in a way, that's not so much help to us either. So if we look at it from our point of view, meaning which of these high qualities of enlightened being is most useful for us and most beneficial for us, you've got to choose his speech, the fact that he teaches us accurately, this is what you should do with your life, this is what you shouldn't do with your life, these are things you should try to accomplish, these are things you should try to avoid, and that accurate presentation of that is what mostly helps us. So it makes sense here that Jetsun Kapa is mainly bowing down to the quality of an enlightened being that they have, that they teach us their speech, holy speech of an enlightened being, and they spend their time mainly in teaching, trying to teach us things. And he's really bowing down, rather than to the body or to the mind state of a Buddha, he's really bowing down to the enlightened words of a Buddha. You could take an example of Michael, Losan Chinzen, okay? he's got, you know, American bodies to us look pretty big and nice. And stuff like that. So he's got this big body, healthy body, and then he's learned all this stuff. But that's not really what attracted you, is it? It was that he opened his mouth and he said something about Dharma, and then you understood what he said about Dharma, and then you had something to practice because he opened his mouth and said something to you. So really, it's not that you didn't come to him for the body, you didn't come to him for the mind so much. You came to him because he could relate to you and explain to you about Dharma. And so that's the most useful quality of this relationship.
Tā chāngchuk chū bēlāp chīn chāchīn yōl xie bā tī khārā sā nā jāsī jī chū bā dūjā lā khātū 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 lā tā sīm jīn jī kēyān chē kū jī dā bēt khu rā jāsī lāp tī chīk tā ngā jāsū lā rōmā nyūmē khu rā shū jī chī lā khu rā lāp jī jāyān yī sā rō khu rā shū jī tāk tā ngē nī shū jī tāk tā ngē khu nā sīm jī dūjā lā pēndō yō nā pēndō chī wī ngā dā lām sā 진인가 다가라는 신경을 편도 뒤에 개 내가 가르치고 있는 개 지기 여자 장주 주변에 괜찮지 이거 이렇게 해 버렸지. 다 레시를 이제 때리고 전에 양 수도 가르잖아. 장고로 가서 산지 두바산지 좀 된 데지 레시 뒤 송 가서 얘는 송도 늘도 가서 막 떠나다. 장주 양만에 가르다. 무강으로 송도 늘도 보고 되네. 어 저 장바 공부 되나. 진 진이 전에 양이 차봐 인자. 어 그래서 가서 레시를 이제 때리고 전에 양 양접 겨도 셀. 전에 양제 전에 양제.
The next verse is explaining the talking about Manjushri and Maitreya, and especially from the point of view of their high spiritual qualities. So it begins by saying knowledge and love, and it compares it to the depths of the ocean. So it says, you know, people like you and me, if we go out and try to stick our arm into the ocean and try to reach down and see how deep it is, it'd be kind of hard to do. And there, to try to get to the bottom of their knowledge and try to get to the bottom of the measure of their love for us and their compassion and their knowledge would be like us trying to stick our arm in the ocean, trying to touch the bottom. So that's what the first line is talking about. Bapakami is difficult to measure. Chanju Chubi Lovchin Chu Yo means, Dishla says, I've never been to the ocean personally, but I know probably you guys have. And as I hear, my understanding is that there are these big waves that keep going across the ocean, and then you can sit on the beach and the waves keep coming in all day, all night. They never stop, keep rolling in, you know, whether anybody's there or not, they just keep rolling in, rolling across the ocean. He says, this one says, their bodhisattva activity, the action of their six perfections is like the constant waves of an ocean. And whenever a student is ready, whenever a disciple has enough virtue, then the wave is reaching into them and touching them from those two holy beings. So it's in that sense, it's constant, it's ever available. These waves are always there. And as soon as the student or the disciple's mind is pure enough, then these waves are rushing over them of knowledge and compassion.
What? And
that's good. then Manjushri is like he said the word in Tibetan is like a gold mine. And he says you could say like a treasure house. Or I guess you guys nowadays would say local bank. Manjushri's knowledge of the speech of the Buddha. So the Buddha spoke these holy words, and then Manjushri is like a bank account of this holy speech, and he's holding it, and he's a repository of it. Okay, and so he's bowing down to the Jambayang Manjushri, and also to the word in Tibetan is Gyaltsab, means what do you call it? Regent. He's waiting in Buddha's heaven. He's holding that space for him until he gets back. And that's Maitreya. That refers to Maitreya and Manjushri are both being referred to as the ocean, the two oceans.
Okay. 다카르스나 대화시비 송랍스 산제점내리 비송비 송랍델레체 티 송랍델레 타 출루시디 당하도 루소르 봐봐 봐봐 소고라 인샤브레스 봐봐 스위싱이 솔로미 뭐 루소고라 인 카르스나 샘담빌 루소 직당 아니 오마르 루소 신네 루소 인샤브레스 타 대 응아르타 토마 산제점내리 셰 슈비 내가라다 솔로니 뭐티 마냠 바체 봐봐 고 카르소르 다르캡 쳔보 중어리 인나야 다토마 산제점내리 고 냥알 레비 제소 팀맨기 둘다 당하도 테르바르 되는 지스도 봐봐 나 테르바르 그때 다 코람베 마냠바체 가서 가봤다 나는 담블링 짠짠 사장 지야래 이제 그 마냠바체 신의 간지하고 유인도 양보시네요 이거 다 퇴진길 되니 류소니 뭐지 다 바깝지는 냠바래 다 냠네 다 냠소 신이라고 그러나 다 술래 그랬어 되니 공부도 죽다 고마비 류소 야 냠소 신이라 냠소 통마르 신이라고 되니 샘담비 류소 냠소 통마 신이라 바바타면 내가 그랬어 니나 다 대한 다 가서 냠소 제바 드드들 제가 많이 미리 두바 산제 좀 되는데 고난 게 마음바나다 너 다감 뒤지네 아니 아 근데 뒤진게 담아 뒤냐매 죽으래서 냐매 죽으지 제소라 아니 가사 니다 딘데지 미 용대 가사 미 딘데 찍다 아니 미 딘데 찍게 아니 야 냠소 찍으래 시도가상에 좀 내대지 당감 마음 용대로 뛰어야 하인다 어 혼이니 아니 오마리 뉴스 어디 냠들이 통마르 냠소 찍지 찍이 샘샘 뉴스 냠바티 통마르 냠소 야 제발 너 혼이니 착사와래 했어
Next, Jetson Kapa is bowing down to the two, what we call the two innovators in Tibetan, that's called those who started the system of the wooden horse, meaning like a car maker, the first car maker, they're called the innovators, okay? And the Buddha taught the Dharma, he taught Hinayana Dharma, he taught Mahayana Dharma, and right after he passed away, right after he passed from this world, then the Hinayana Dharma, Theravada Dharma started to spread in the world very well. And as you know, it spread to countries like all throughout Southeast Asia, and so the lower way spread throughout the world very well. And then the higher way, the Mahayana way, went into sort of a decline for a while, right after the Buddha passed away, and it didn't spread so much. So really, the function of the two great innovators was not so much innovation, but restoration. And their task was to restore the two great Mahayana schools, which is the Mainomi school and the Middle Way school. So the function of Aryanagarjuna and of Asanga, the master Asanga, were more to restore something that had been there before and then had sort of started to disappear in this world. And they were not just restoring, they were not just restorers, they were actually predicted by Lord Buddha. Lord Buddha, during his time on this planet, said, my teachings on Mahayana will go into sort of a decline, and then these two great beings will come. Nagarjuna came 700 years after, and then we think that about 150 years later, Asanga. So they restored. They were not just restorers, but Lord Buddha actually predicted that they would be coming into the world and would undertake this duty of bringing the Mahayana Dharma back to its original glorious level. And so he's bowing down to these two innovators and restorers who were actually predicted by Lord Buddha.
And then she seemed that she be solo nimity, Lusoni Chabra, while Lusoni Yamso Chen Chabra. How could you so when Yamba Yan Yamso Chabati, Manyamba Zin, they gained the Kansa, Polas, Lesone, Tambuling Dilatini, Aranzu Dakartore, Nambi Chula, Pana Yungi, Losawa, Loselbo Yungi, Mangu Jars, or Tezola, any Mignizing Chen Pa, Lamden, Chenki, Kansa, Polas, Takansa Della, Uma Lusoma, Tatama, Tegentella.
So now he's bowing down to, after the restoration of the Mahayana, after the two great innovators had brought it back up to its original level, now he's bowing down to those who maintained it, who maintained the lineage down to us. And he's pointing out not everybody, but just the main ones. They could be called, Zamling Losel means like students of the world, like we are normal students, we are normal people, and they are like people who open our eyes. Their job is to open our eyes. So they're called those who open the eyes of clear minds of the world. And then he starts mentioning some of the Lama's names. Pakpahlas Ayadeva, Baos Tayang, Ashvagosha, who's also called Bao. I don't know if that's what you know, Bao. No, that's the next one. Next one is Buddha Palita. Next one is Baba Viveka. And then Chandakirti. I have to look up Baba for you. I think it's, I forgot.
Then
he's also bowing down to more lamas of the mind-only tradition, the mind-only lineage. So he's continuing with the mind-only lineage lamas. He goes into Master Vasubandhu. And then Loten is a Stira... Siddhavati, I think. Siddhavati. And then Dignaga. And then Dharmakirti. And he's bowing down. And his Dhammingyan means like jewels in this planet, jewels in this world. So he's referring to the lineage of the mind-only school.
Okay, I'm going to Tan di sham yene ma chene shunglu ma ndu rigpi lam do yang xie ba ne ta ta na ta ngang de ba de yong ane
na sa
ta shunglu ma ndu rigpi lam do yang ngwa ma ndu ngwa ba to ba yin de to ji men ba jiang to ba ma ju ne de ni jiang ge lam mi chen ji ne tong ne ta yin de za ba na ng ra tu de le tu ta ma ga san ji bi dan ba de tu ju ne song de ane ge na la pe shunglu ma ndu che ba che ba chi mo ba na ta shunglu ma ndu de ba de
Dun
Sanjay The next is what we call a pledge to compose the word. This is like a standard in a Buddhist book where the author says, okay, now I promise I'll write this book. And once they promise, they never give up. So he's going to start writing the book. And he says there were beings in Tibet. He's referring in an oblique way to certain great scholars who preceded him in the Tibetan tradition. So now we're out of India. We're talking about after the great translation period was finished. And we're talking about the great Tibetan wise scholars who came after the translations were completed. And when it says here, you have heard many great teachers. Here he's referring to Bhutan Rinchen Drup, who is one of the great, two generations before Jetsun Kapa. He was one of the great teachers in Tibet. And then he refers to Rigpin Lamdu Yang, is referring to great Sakyas, teachers like Chapa Chuki Senge and Rigpin Tok Singwa. Rinchen Tok Yangdropa, who is also a great Sakya scholar. Nyawan Mambo Tengkyang, even though you, all of you, former Tibetans, up to 1400, right? You really worked hard to understand the meaning of the scriptures. But, even though you have many great qualities, there are certain points which you didn't understand, which you didn't get. And I, due to the kindness of my Lama, who is Manjushri,
did see them very clearly. So as a result, out of love, and not out of any kind of feelings of competitiveness or jealousy or anything like that, out of love for them and for also the beings, his students, and people to come after him, Dakishie means, I promise to write this book. I will explain those points that even the great early Tibetans, even though they were very learned, and even though they made great efforts, they didn't perceive totally. But I, due to the kindness of Manjushri, my teacher, did perceive that I'm going to write a book about that.
This
promise to compose the work. The next lines are what we call exhorting the students to listen, you know, encouraging the disciples to listen carefully. Now the next two lines are that. It's a standard part of a Buddhist book that we are asking the student. Now this is very important to listen to. And you should listen with great respect and try to learn this thing well. Encouraging the students to listen carefully and to follow the book carefully and you know, recognizing that if you are intelligent, if you are a person with perspicacity, whatever that is, then you should, take this teaching to heart, think about it carefully, listen to it carefully. And Dan says, it doesn't only apply to monks sitting in Sarah Monastery. This advice is also directed toward those Americans and later generations who study this book. So saying, okay, you who have intelligence, come, you know, listen to this book, take its contents carefully, and enjoy it.
What do you mean?
So he's describing the potential student for this book, and now he's going into the wording of that. If you're not sure where we are, it's seven lines from the bottom. Okay. Tenbe Denyi means thusness of the teaching, and it's referring to emptiness itself. So Tenbe Denyi means the thusness that we start. We're on page 2, seven lines from the bottom. Tenbe Denyi. Dobi Namchuki means those of you who hope to be people who could perceive emptiness. Okay, those of you who hope to be people who could understand the meaning of emptiness, examine it. And then Mawadame, those of you who hope to become unmatched professors, meaning teachers of this way. Okay, then Duna means those of you who hope to be that way, those of you who hope to understand emptiness, those of you who hope to later pass it on to other people. Kupin Yun means listen with a pure heart and respect the teacher.
Bomba,
All the lines from where from the sixth line from the bottom of page two all the way up to the eighth line from the top of page four is a general presentation of what we're going to be talking about. It refers to a sutra which we don't have anymore. Some people say it was translated into Tibetan, some say it was never translated into Tibetan, but either way we don't have it, we don't see it around nowadays. And it's called Yukor Kyongi Shuba, the sutra requested by Yukor Kyong. I believe it's Upali, I'm not sure, but we'll have to check. But somebody named Yukor Kyong has requested a sutra. All the text that comes and then after that for about two pages is describing the general outline. It's a general outline of what we're going to be talking about. In general, there are four great schools of ancient Indian thought. The highest of them is Madhyamika. The highest group among the Madhyamika is the Prasangika. And in these lines from the sutra, we're describing in general terms how the Madhyamika and Prasangika explain things. The next four lines, which are the actual quotation from the sutra, start out by saying "Tomba Shiva Kyo Mepesu," which means the way of emptiness, the way of peace, and the way of something that never started. Okay, and he says, how do we explain that? In general, they're all referring to emptiness itself. So even though emptinesses are all the same, every emptiness is equal to every other emptiness, the thing which is empty has a difference. So there are differences between the objects which are empty. So even though the three emptinesses are the same, the emptinesses are giving three different names because of the difference of the object which is empty. When you say object, you're also referring to the mind which perceives the emptiness, because the subject, object implies subject. So really you're talking about the subject which perceives emptiness, and then dividing it into three kinds by the object which is empty. Even though all emptinesses are the same, the thing which is empty is different. So there are three kinds of emptiness stated here: emptiness, peace, and that which never started. And that's referring to three different kinds of emptiness. Really, this is called the, in scripture, this is technically called the three doors of liberation. And these are three different aspects, or three different flavors of emptiness, which are really all the same, but they're different because of the object which is empty. And these are the first door of liberation is emptiness itself. The second one is the fact that nothing has any characteristic of its own. And the last one is called the fact that there is no wish. And then those are called the three doors of liberation. And so, and the last one is the fact that there's nothing has any wish. Now, what that means is a long story, but those are three emptinesses that are being described here in the opening lines. And then he says, "Mishetini," because people don't understand these three kinds of emptiness, "Droa Kemgirpa," people are wandering around in the samsara forest, you know, aimlessly. They don't know. They can't help. They're just hopelessly being wandering around in this forest. And And he's about to, the Buddha is about to outline the ways in which you could come to see emptiness and stop wandering around. And if you care about people, and if you want to help them get out of suffering, then you would be undertaking this book as a means to see emptiness directly, so that you yourself could be of real help to other people. Generally, you could talk about emptiness. Let's talk about emptiness. Let's talk about these three from the point of view of an actual object. He says, let's take a water base. No, let's take a pen. He says, the pen, the fact that it doesn't exist truly is the first door to freedom. So the one we talk about, the door to the freedom, which is called emptiness itself, which is the first of the three doors to freedom. The emptiness itself of the pen, the fact that the pen does not exist truly, is the first of the three doors of freedom. The door of freedom that's called things don't have any characteristics of their own refers to the fact, it's a little tricky, okay, that the cause of the pen doesn't come from its own side, that the cause of the pen, the things that produce the pen, don't have any existence from their own side or true existence. So that's the second of the two doors for liberation.
What?
Which is called things don't have any characteristics of their own. Then the very difficult one, the door to freedom, which is called no wishes, the no wishes exist, refers to the fact that the things which the pen produces, such as writing or letters like that, the results of the pen existing, they also have no existence, no true existence, no existence from their own side. So that's what it means. The third door to liberation, which means that things don't have any characteristics of their, I'm sorry, which is that there's no wish, refers that to the fact that the things which the pen produces, the results which the pen produces, also have no existence from true existence from one side. So those are the three doors to liberation, refer to the pen, the cause of the pen, and the result of the pen. Apart from a difference in the object which we're describing, its emptiness, right? There's a difference of three objects, cause, pen, and result of pen. We're describing a difference of three emptinesses on the basis of the three different things that are empty, but the three emptinesses are totally the same. Emptiness is always totally the same, just that the object which is empty is changing in each of the three doors to liberation. He's going on. You can also get into this from another point of view. So far we've been talking about the cause of the pen itself, and the result of the pen. But you can also look at the pen itself and say, the nature of the pen, the pen as a cause, and the pen as a result. So you can also describe the three doors of emptiness that way, that you're looking at the pen itself and talking about the pen as a cause, the pen as a nature or an object, and the pen as a result. So even in one moment, you can talk about, without reference to three different times, even in one moment or one pen, you can describe it as being, as displaying the three doors of emptiness, those three kinds of emptiness. Jetsun Kabe is going on. He's using this sutra quotation as the basis for his whole explanation. So he gave you four lines. He says, look, it's authoritative. The Buddha himself spoke about it. And now he's going to go ahead and rip it apart and examine it and analyze it and give you an explanation of it. So actually, even though there are three doors to liberation, they are all referring to emptiness, and all emptinesses are the same. But in order for us to understand it more clearly, Jetsun Kabe is going to go on now and explain more about it. The next line says, the very nature of things is extremely difficult to perceive. And the word dok in Tibetan, if you spell it a different way, means to be hungry. Your stomach is, you are feeling hungry. So it says, you know, people like you and me must forget perceiving emptiness. You know, we have, you know, for us, it's the only thing that we could ever perceive, dok, is the emptiness in that we feel hungry, dok. So that's about the level of our ability to perceive things. You know, he's making a joke. Okay. The Buddha has seen that the reason that we suffer and the reason that we haven't been liberated from samsara and suffering is that we haven't perceived emptiness yet. We haven't perceived emptiness, what it means to be empty yet. Because of our failure, he's going through that cause and effect relationship. Because of our failure to understand emptiness, we collect karma, and we get feelings that because we misunderstand our own self nature, because we don't know who I am, because of our failure to understand emptiness, then we are going out to protect a me and to take care of a me and to ignore other people at the expense of other people to take care of me, and collecting bad karma, all because we don't understand the nature of ourselves and who we are. Because we haven't understood the emptiness of ourselves. So based on a lack of understanding about our own emptiness, we misunderstand who I am. And then based on that, we undertake activities to protect that person, and we ignore other people. And then based on that, we collect bad karma, and based on that, we have suffering. So that's a couple of things. The Buddha has seen that this is the case of why we suffer is that we haven't seen emptiness.
What in there is? That's the concept.
Generally speaking, it'd be very useful if we could understand the emptiness of outer objects, or the objects around us, the objects in our environment. But really, the one that causes us to collect bad karma, the misunderstanding or the lack of understanding about emptiness that is responsible for our suffering and collecting our most bad karma is misunderstanding the emptiness of ourselves. So that's the most important one to concentrate on, is to try to understand the emptiness of ourselves, because it's the lack of understanding of the emptiness of ourselves that inspires us to collect bad karma, to protect ourselves in a way which depends on not understanding emptiness. That's why on page 3, line 2, Jetsun Kapa begins to say, that's why it's important for those of you who are intelligent, he's using the same wording as before, that you should make great efforts to try to grasp what it means for something to be empty. And really, to understand or perceive emptiness directly depends directly upon understanding what parts of what the Buddha ever taught are to be taken literally, and what parts of what the Buddha taught are to be taken figuratively. When did he say what he meant, and when did he didn't say what he meant, because he needed to help somebody in the audience. So it's very important for us, if we're going to understand emptiness or perceive it, we have to be able to distinguish, make the distinction between this the Buddha taught meaning what he said, and this the Buddha taught not meaning what he said, and this is a very tricky point.
ta changen si tu sa chang si tu chang si tu chang den 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 si
From a very much more profound point of view, the meaning of the word figurative and the meaning of the word literal, figurative meaning with the sense of not being what it seems to be, is referring to deceptive reality, deceptive reality around us. And the word literal meaning is what it seems to be, is the words and the intention match each other, then that's in a sense on a deeper level is also referring to ultimate reality. So just the words, literal and figurative and literal, are referring to the two great realities that exist around us, deceptive reality and ultimate reality. And when we get into a debate in the debate ground, this is the point that we're trying to work out so that we can see emptiness. In an actual debate, you get a problem on this point because, you know, if you debate this page, which we do in the monastery, basically you're telling somebody you have to be able to discern or distinguish the difference between figurative and literal, meaning deceptive reality and ultimate reality, in order to see emptiness. So in a sense, what you're saying is you have to perceive emptiness in order to perceive emptiness. If you get into the debate about this on the debate ground, you're going to get stuck here.
What is your word? He did that kind of business. How did it? How did la tongue in jits here, la tongue in jits here, de la? Ah, here is it. Ah, carasore.
The way to get out of this in the debate on the debate ground is to start clarifying which literal and which figurative you're talking about. So one, you can say, from the point of view of the books which express the difference between figurative and literal, which it means now referring to expressions being literal and figurative, you have to understand that distinction between which expressions or which books are literal and which expressions or books are figurative. You have to understand that distinction before you can get to the further distinction of the distinction between realities being what they seem to be and realities not being what they seem to be. So you can answer it that way if you get in a debate with somebody. I'm talking, you have to distinguish literal and figurative on the level of expression in order to get the literal and figurative on the level of realities that they're talking about. On a deeper level, you can distinguish between the two reality types, right? We just said that you had to distinguish between figurative and literal in the sense of expressions or books being figurative and literal in order to get to figurative and literal on a sense of reality. Which reality is what it seems, which reality is not what it seems. But on a deeper level, you can discuss the second one in terms of two levels in itself, meaning we're trying to get to a pramana, a tema, which can perceive emptiness. That's the goal. We're trying to distinguish between deceptive reality and literal reality on an ultimate sense, in a perceptual level of tema, meaning correct or valid perception, correct perception. We're trying to get to that level. But if you state that that is the goal, then what are you going to talk about as the method to get to that goal? Are you saying, you have to understand the distinction between literal and figurative and not perceive it with pramana, not perceive it with the correct perception, in order to get to a point where you can make the distinction with the correct perception. He says, yeah, that's what we're saying. So what do you call the state of mind in which you analyze or examine the difference between literal and figurative in order to get to a realization with a correct perception of the distinction between literal and figurative? That's what we call learning. You go to class, you think about it, you try to figure out the difference between deceptive reality and ultimate reality, and at that point you do not have a pramana or a correct perception about it. You are not able to perceive it even on a rational basis. You cannot give the correct reasons why that should be the case, that this is literal and that is figurative reality. So at the beginning, at the stage that we're at a place where we are trying to figure this out with some kind of guessing or approximation. You know, we are saying, I think it's probably like that because I think that's probably like that, and this is not a pramana, this is not an accurate perception, but it's a guess or an approximation that we do when we first start learning about the subject of emptiness. So in that case, you can say that one must reach an approximate understanding of emptiness in order to get to the true realization of emptiness, whether that realization is rational, based on logic, deductive, or whether it's direct. So in this case, even on a perceptual level, you got to do one before you do the other. So when you're in a debate ground, you can answer it that way too.
What is this? Tāngyā jē kūs lāwar mās, tā tāngyā jē kūs yé tī lūng tsaṁ jī tāngyā jē tūku mā rē sōng rē sī. Tā lūng tā kī tāngyā jē mū tū sē nā, sāng jē chōm tē tē jī lūng kī nā lā, jī tāng tē rē sōng rē nā, khurā rā rā tāk tā chē, khurā pē lām tāng yī jē chē nī shā, jī ngē tē rē sōng rē nā, khurā ngē tē rē sē nā, tāk tā shā nā, sāng jē chōm tē tē jī lū jā sō lā tē tē, nē tū tā mī tā jī māng pū chōng shā, tē yu tū tā, anī tāng jī
Now, on the subject of deciding what did the Buddha say and that he meant to be taken figuratively and when the Buddha meant something to be taken literally, if to make that distinction, which is the name of this book, right, making the distinction between what is figurative and what is literal, is it safe to take what he said is his distinction as a distinction? Yeah. So if the Buddha came and said, oh, here's the distinction, here's how you make the distinction between what's figurative and literal, are we to take that always as literal? Because that's not the way the Buddha works. The Buddha has different disciples. His disciples have different levels of understanding. He has to present even the decision of what to take as literal and figurative as something which is designed for individual students. So he may even be describing how to distinguish between literal and figurative in a way which is figurative. So you can't even take that on its appearance. You know, you can't even take that as being literal when he explained the difference between what's literal and figurative. So we cannot depend on scripture alone to make the distinction between what is figurative and what is literal, because if we did that, we would get into the habit of taking everything the Buddha said as literal, and then we'd be in deep trouble, because then our minds would be really blowing up. There's a very interesting conundrum that comes up if you look at, for example, the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras themselves, which are divided into the briefer, the medium length, and the more extensive one. So when he taught it to the Prasangika people who are Madhyamika Prasangika, highest level of ability, intellectual ability, so he's explaining it to them, and he's telling them straight out, this is the meaning of emptiness, this is what emptiness means, nothing has any true existence, and he goes like very heavy on them, and they get it. And so for them, these one set of books is literal. But the same set of books can be figurative to somebody else. So when he meets the mind-only school people, and they don't have the intellectual or dharma ability of the Prasangika, they complain to Lord Buddha and say, you know, did you mean it when you made all these radical statements, you know? And were you talking literally when you said it? He says, oh, no, don't worry. I was just being figurative, you know. I was just trying to explain it in sort of a figurative way. So he said the same thing. You know, he explained it even as being literal or figurative to two different people, totally different. So you can't go just taking the word of the Buddha about what's literal and what's figurative to decide what's literal and figurative, because that could have been literal or figurative. This philosophical hassle will come back to haunt us later in this book. We'll have to cover it again later. Now, Jesikov is going to go on to explain that another indication that the Buddha spoke some things which he meant to be taken literally, and he spoke other things that he meant to be taken figuratively, is reflected in the very fact that these two great innovators had to come along and start explaining, this is what he meant, this is not what he meant. So if he hadn't meant something figuratively and he hadn't meant something literally, it would have been a big waste of time for all these commentators to write all these commentaries in all the hundreds of years to try to take the Buddha's words like the rice in India and pick out the rocks for you. It wouldn't have been necessary. So the fact that they did write these books and the fact that they did go into these long explanations about the Buddha did mean that, the Buddha didn't mean that, he was trying to tell this to that group, but it's not true what he told to the other group because the other group just had to hear it that way. If it weren't necessary to make this distinction, then there wouldn't be this great tradition of Buddhist teaching ever since the Buddha explaining the distinctions. What I just said is reflected in this book on page 3 on the 7th and 8th lines where Jetsun Kapa says, if this were not the case, then it would have been useless effort for people like the great innovators to undertake writing all these commentaries about what the Buddha really meant and what the Buddha didn't really mean.
有啊,他提出大概了呢,送了呢,长年几九组没定不怎么送起,是给人一些东西。
And even in the Buddha's own speech, he gave many different explanations of how to decide what was figurative and what was literal. So even on that point, he was being figurative and literal.
我跟你说，他就问了我怎么就开始送的，鸡蛋，你晚上没几个现在刚刚落了，刚现在刚刚落，该吃，快点去热身了，迎接刚刚的，大大点被吃吧，大，去买热身了，买一杯杯，大大吃吧，你都话是鸡蛋，买了三件准备的鸡蛋，新鲜素是牛把它全部它落到三百斤，送过去的，啊你送在刚刚落，刚送在刚刚落，没几个来三六的来半拿了，你刚开来说，落到下个月是，鸡蛋的多啊，是，但是三件准备就送了呀。
And then Jetsun Kapa goes on to say, look, even in the normal world, when you meet somebody and they start talking to you, you have to decide what they say is literal, what they say is figurative, when they're saying what they mean to say and when they're not saying what they mean. And even in the normal world, with normal people that you bump into and you start having a conversation with them, you have to be making this distinction all the time. Oh, he's not being literal at that moment. He's making a pun or a joke or something. This person is being, now he's being literal, now he's not being literal. If you have to make that distinction just having a normal conversation with somebody you bump into on the street, then of course you have to make that distinction with an enlightened being who can read the minds of all the listeners for all of time and say, I better say this way to this person right now because they need it this way right now, and I better change it when I talk to this other person because they need it a different way right now. So if even with normal people you have to make this distinction, then of course you'd have to make this distinction with an omniscient being who is adjusting every word he says, understanding the implications out for all of time. You better make the distinction, or if you take everything as literal, you know, everything he said is exactly the way he said it, you're going to have a big problem in your mind. Even with a person that you meet on the street, if you take everything they say as literal, your mind's going to blow up.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Everything I just said is reflected in the next four lines that start with Dini about halfway down the page at the end of that line and go down, it's the 10th line to the, about the 13th line. Everything I just said is reflected in the Tibetan there in those next four lines.
What did you
say?
Nothing. What was it? He said, I'm going to talk to you.
He's referring to one of these Tibetan sayings that is called the idiot looking at the water. And the dumbhead looking at the water, okay? Somebody spills some water on the table. Different little rivulets of water start going off in different directions. And if your mind was like, your mind would turn like that. Like if you believed that everything that someone said literally, if you took everything they said literally in a conversation, then it would be like your mind would be, it's like kind of like scrambled eggs or something like that. And your mind would be like a scrambled egg. It's like in those drug posters and stuff. You know, that your mind would be like a scrambled egg and you couldn't figure out anything. If you took everything that someone said as literal, even in a normal conversation, you'd end up with scrambled eggs.
What do you mean? I said, I'm going to go to the house.
So in practical terms, how are we supposed to figure out this distinction between what's figurative and what's real? In very practical terms, how are we supposed to go about what we have to do in order to see emptiness? So he says we have to depend on somebody who is authoritative. We have to go back to the innovators, the innovator that who started the Madhyamika and the innovator who started the mind-only school, and you or who restored it, right? And you have to go back to them and you have to say, you have to go see, what did they say? What did they say is the mind-only system for seeing emptiness? What did they say is the mind-only, is the Madhyamika system for seeing emptiness? We have to go back to them. Don't just take, he's going back to this water thing. Don't just take what everybody says as authoritative. Don't just wander around and take believe whatever you read. Go back to the authoritative original sources, which is the two great innovators who restored the mind-only and the Madhyamika systems, and try to learn how to see emptiness according to each of those two different methods of seeing emptiness.
Okay.
And what I just said is reflected in the rest of page 3 and the beginning of page 4, where it says we have to go back to the people who were predicted by the Buddha. And the Buddha himself said, these people will be able to distinguish what I said. They'll be able to tell you, this is literal, this is figurative, this is what this means, this is what it means. we have to go back to the people that the Buddha predicted would be able to do that, which is the two great innovators. So that's what the rest of this page is saying. Tatupa said, means now Jetsun Kabe is winding things up, he's wrapping things up, he's saying, look, after all this conversation, what does it all boil down to? Tatupa means, what does it all boil down to? You must learn to make the distinction between what the Buddha taught, you must be able to examine it, you must be able to analyze it with rational thinking. You must be able to reason. You must be able to figure out rationally, with good reasons, this is what he meant, this is not what he meant. You have to be able to, ultimately it all boils down to your own ability to think reasonably, with reason, and perceive with valid perception what's true based on your own reasoning, and not based on just what different people came and told you, and you heard different things from different people. Take what everybody says as literal, try to get all this input from different people who don't know anything and come up with some mishmash, which ultimately, if you compare it to what you know to be reasonable or logical, doesn't work. You know what I mean? That if you examine it with logic, you see that there's a discrepancy between what that teaching says and what you, in your heart, know is reasonable or logical, or what could logically be true. And if you reach that point where what you know in your heart could be logical and reasonable, and then what you're going around and trying to say you believe in don't match each other, other people will start to pick up on that. They'll sense that you, what you're saying is no longer defendable or defensible or logical. And they'll pick up on that, and then they'll say, oh, we can't believe this person. This person is not a reliable person to learn from. And then you'll become a person, what we call, not a tenetibu, not a person who is infallible, not a person who cannot, there's a thing called a person who cannot tell a lie, or a person who cannot speak anything, which is a person who can only speak the truth. You won't be like that. You'll be this other kind of person that people are like, maybe I can trust what you say, maybe I can't trust what you say. So what you say must match what you know to be logical, what you figured out logically, and that is what it all boils down to, not what people say, but what you have determined with immaculate deduction of your own mind, what's true and what's false.
Okay. 反正他的人丁还是休息吧，对，人家嘛，休息休息吧，对了，对吧？我以为铁矿那年代，特别特别是被毒气的，特别吃多，是吧？哦，对的。你看，中国人是那，他都那起码没被日本人给过来，是吧？要结果的，起码没被日本人过来嘛的，他都那弄了七八天的大脚嘛的，是吧？是。对嘛，看了是那，我以为铁矿那年代是那，但那恐怕打五谷打不了，那就牛骨点点把它抹出去，然后先给抹出去，对。三年中间那个松土啊，是农场过来的，你知道吗？牛骨那些抹出不的。
都从前那的马建那的书记那样扛，但是讲南北区看两那的马建的，如果那些马主把他点把马主的生意过，以前是县的点把主生意过，看了我们这些牛蛋鸡，看了马对不起，都毕竟用的是国货的，点热度过人民都是牛骨过，再去见了，南北区看没两年，见点马的生意，他们说拉不过的，见了，让些马主把他点把马主的大就先去玩的，三年中间那个送过来，牛蛋把马主的生意送过来，就让看两个是国货，我就去过玩的，还是说牛蛋把马主的就这样过。
So the text here in line 4 is talking about that thing which is in actuality empty, that thing which in actuality has no nature of its own. And he says, you can go around, we Buddhists are not the kind that have to go around depending on what the words say. You know, we are not a belief system, or we are not Buddhists by just picking up on words and looking at words and saying whatever the word says that we believe. You can't do that. Even if it's what Lord Buddha said, you can't go saying, Lord Buddha said it, so I believe it. Or, and then you can't go around to other people and insisting that they accept what you believe because Lord Buddha said it, Lord Buddha said it. That's what the words say. You know, you can't go around like that. He says, you can't, as Buddhists, be going around like that. Ultimately, everything you believe must be defendable in your own mind by your own logic because you figured it out to be true. So if we're talking about a vase, let's talk about the pen. If we're talking about the emptiness of a pen, then we can't be going around and saying, oh, it's empty because Lord Buddha said so. It's empty because Lord Buddha said so, because the words say so. We have to be able to demonstrate to normal people how this pen is empty and what the emptiness of this pen means. And then once they perceived the emptiness of the pen, just through normal conversational means, then they will have become Buddhists. And they have accepted our belief because it's logical to them, not because somebody said so, and maybe they don't even know they're a Buddhist at that point. But their belief at that moment is a perfect Buddhist belief because it's based not on what somebody said, but because it makes sense and they figured it out and it's logical to them.
다디 바라들 저거는 어떤 거 지금 가면 망부 숨어라. 이제 망부 주네 망부 숨어라. 타고 가르세는 콩도 다가시야 매세 또 콩도 비슷한 거야. 통 가봤다 그래서는 산지 좀 된 데기 숨으라 콜라 숨고 가르송 때 강가로 딱딱해 랭규어 말이 직배 이제 바시는 거 고고를 쓰는 게 개체 시야부터 산지 좀 된데 콩라 랑기 나만 숨 살아. 가르를 쓰면 당연히 너무 장기세. 내 공기에 있어요. 알았어. 괜히 왕 디시네 산에 쉬우시바 되나. 얘는 마신이 인진 나바테나 도와. 괜히 왕 디시네 결론 다 가면 캐는 이세제 나의 실신도 레바달라 나이가 나와체 귀치기니. 다 산지 좀 된데 콩라 랑기 근데 송도 와스. 가르스는 배샹 틱탕 보니면디. 봐봐. 오 결론 다 가면 캐는 이세제 나의 실신도 틱니면디 배샹. 아, 되네. 가르인 봐나. 레바달라 나이가 나와체 귀치미니스 되디 송샤레. 다 빼고라 가르스는 세르 뭐라 다 되게 캐나 다 고르스. 캐나도 정말 세베 오여다. 그래서 세르콜 딱지 제고데 다 시다 딱지 하고 지에 찍라 가르르스나. 고 메라 짜샤나 진다 비와이 말이스라와. 아, 다 로그로 찍다 양 콜에 다 가르스로 다 집 들이다기는 지금 도지 누가 될라 다나 양 찍기 양 세르티. 그 이미 지하고 그래서 다 딱지 뭐 무슨 세고 나올로 그 이미고 다이고 찍지 제디 나올로 콜라. 야샹다 죽도면 다에 제니 세르콜 딱지 지디다 메라 타게치 도이감 찍다리에치 나올로 배 야샹다 죽으면 삼다 제 숨숨도 와 개나시세 산지 배 대신도 산지 좀 되는데 호랑 숨 숨으로 코랑 라양 말하고 길에서 가르사래 아 제 빠숨지 탁도 댄스 제 빠숨지 탁게 도는 답답해네 제 빠숨지 탁게 믿도는 니 산지 지가랑아 자 침부로 제니 나 자 침부 임바다 니 가르 제니 저랑 Tela kumma jeva chene, yu xa xo san 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 leba tala mai ka lawa chayi kuyichir min sin san 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 san.
So now having said that you shouldn't depend on words and that you should depend on what makes sense, what's logical, what makes sense in your own heart that you know and not depend on words, then to prove that this is a correct viewpoint to have about Buddhism and Buddhist learning, Jensen Kapa goes to scriptural authority. Because these guys need it, right? So he's going on to, he says, you don't believe what I said about depending on the meaning and figuring it out yourself and believing what's logical and what makes sense to you rather than just believing whatever the book says? Well, the Buddha said you better do that, and the book says that. Okay, so he's taking scriptural authority to prove that idea. So now he pulls out a very famous quotation, which begins from the end of the fifth line on page 4 where it says Dungi Wangi Sinye, and the Buddha himself is saying, look, I'm going to teach you how to be Buddhist. I'm going to teach you how to come to a belief system properly. He says, don't do it just because you like me. Don't do it just because I said so. Don't do it because this book was spoken by the Buddha. I don't want you to believe what I say just because I said it. I want you to believe in something because you have examined it and because it makes sense to you logically. And then you should believe what I say. It's, for example, like gold. And he says, well, you being Americans, probably a lot of gold over there. You know all this stuff. Gold you have to examine in three different ways. In ancient times, you know, somebody brought to you a rock and said, this is gold, you know, to buy it from me for a lot of money. So you have to take it. And sec means you have to refine it. You burn it. You melt it. You smelter it. You know, you see what's in there. One way to do that is to take it in a cup and melt it down and see if it's all pure gold or not. Another one is tar, again mentioned dar. Dar means there's a special stone, it's called touchstone, I think, that you take a gold and you draw it across that stone, you rub it on the stone, and then it leaves a certain track. And real gold leaves a certain track, and fake stones don't leave this track, this kind of line on the other stone. Or you could che. Che means you'd actually take the gold bar and you cut it in half to see if there's any brown brass or some other metal down deep inside, you know. And so you could, those are three methods of determining whether what I taught you is true or not. In the same way, you have to use the three kinds of reasoning. It's called Chepasimpitapa. It means what I said is true or pure only after, to you, only after you've used three different tests to determine whether it's true or not. And then Buddha, in the last wrap-up here is, I don't want you not examining what I say and just believing in everything I say. Why? Oh, Lord Buddha said it. It's a sutra. We have to believe it. He says, that's not the approach I want Buddhists to take. I want Buddhists to study it, use these three tests on everything I say. If it makes sense, accept it. If it doesn't make sense, junk it. Don't believe it. And I want you to use these three tests on everything I say.
Indeed.
Now I want to go into the meaning of the three tests. What are the three tests that you should use on Buddhist scripture itself? So you're taking, so you've got some kind of Buddhist text here, some Buddhist scripture here, and you want to use three tests to decide whether it's true or not. The first test is what we call your direct experience, direct perceptual experience, meaning things you've heard yourself, things you can see yourself, things you've tasted yourself, things you've thought yourself. These three tests of direct, your own direct experience, does what this scripture says in any way contradict what I myself, through my own direct experience, know to be true? That's the first test. You check it against what you have seen, what you have perceived with your own direct experience. And if there's no problem, if there's no contradiction, if it's in keeping with what you yourself have directly experienced, then it passes the first of the three tests.
And it is. 他中世国就是倒闭，嗯，我到几万，你要把面巴是，因为没电，你等你们多没多电，你电，他们可能我到几万，你要把面巴的好苦啊。他中世国就倒闭，是不是变成俺们这边的这些？ 他给他人不能有的，他给土啊是通个毒呢，没活动我是通药嘛的呢，土啊个大的，没得点点毒啊，三百几个，三六七米线嘛应该的，土啊通个活动米线了吧？你那怕他没药，他就给我米线当往线，天天买一百几，几把才买几个帕金，我说，天当天天抓米大把一米九千三米，抓米大把多个人的，几把才买几个了？其实这个。
Then there's a second level of reality, if you think about it. The first level we were talking about were things that you could see directly, taste directly, think directly. But there's another level of reality which you could call slightly difficult, or slightly hidden. And for that kind of reality, you have to use a different test. You have to go on to a different level of checking, which is, means logic or deduction. So things you cannot see directly with your eyes, but things you have to deduce, you have to figure out with logic or deduction. An example would be if we see out here in the field at a distance some column of smoke, then even though we can't see the fire directly, through deduction, because the fire itself, and not the smoke by the way, because the smoke is something you see directly, but the fire itself, whether or not there's a fire is something you have to deduce, you have to figure out. So if you see smoke, then the fire itself is something we call something rather slightly hidden or slightly difficult to perceive. So you would have to use logic to decide whether or not there was fire there. With reference to the second of the three tests, you have to decide that whether or not what the Buddha said in any way contradicts what you know logically to be correct. You see what I mean? So even though you may not be able to figure out something directly or see it directly, does what this scripture says in any way contradict anything I myself, even though I can't perceive it directly, know with deduction to be the case? And if it doesn't contradict something that you know to be true through deduction, then it has passed the second test.
Yes. 他结巴孙巴结巴了，结巴孙巴过了，心都马东啊，心都过，心过多，心都过久多，跟你一结结巴，你要把玉米垫的，垫的把没把些。他心都过久，谁的阿拉都别的，三节中间的了不，扛上过了别菜米几乎一毛钱了，别加上去煮，扛上的别菜米几乎的菜垫了，加上去煮菜的，他菜垫一毛的，他可以送熟了，一结结不熟了，他可以送的送了给拿了，对的，送了，他可以给军送个嘛嘞，啥么子呢？一结结过吧，扛起几。진대지글 체내니 말아도 하고 그야지 리카식 지와로 해 마토로 사지니 양 알아도 이 리카 따사 땅이 시다시다 하 먹으니 빼나 그래봐 경아 말로 짐바 땅 손에 체대라 빼줘 좀 보는 거야 경아 말로 서바 야보 검 손에 체대라 아니 수내 나가 매 받아로 가서 수 제발로 서바 근데 용그리 세고 말아도 리카 따사 땅이 시다시다 니에요 말이지 다 가르서는 사니에 좀 된데 체미 지고 이 받으면 이렇게 해서 시에 체는 수 삼리나는 땅땅 립주는 오다 그 요 겨와 체나 겨와 용그리 요 미겨 오시 겨 동아 용그리 시야 콜라 티니 오 요 겨와 체나 겨 겨와 용하고 티니 이지에 달라 떼네 티니 신에 알아서 삼리 나라 레게 지라바 오 틴데 레게기 체마 달라 신도 꼭 줄도 비 체마 시가 다 그 자기 보마 딘 데마 마도 시야 바 콜라 니그 미도 떼 니그 도나 케마레 니그 미도 다 가라 떼 답지어 거기 다 제바 숨바 드리겠어
Now onto the third examination. By the way, he also mentioned in the second one that an example of a slightly difficult or obtuse object would be subtle impermanence, impermanence itself, right? That's what we call a subtle, rather, you have to figure it out with deduction. You cannot see subtle impermanence, the constant change of an object with your direct perceptions. You have to figure it out logically that something is getting older by the microsecond. That's something you can only perceive with deduction. So now he says, what about the third case? This would be something like the fact that these would be very difficult to perceive objects, extremely hidden objects, such as the workings of karma. Why is it the case that if you are generous with people, you're going to get back a lot of money, you'll become financially successful? Why is it the case that if you are patient with people, then physically you'll be an attractive person? No. Why are those the case? How do we prove that those are true? These we have to perceive with what we call belief based on reason. Okay, meaning we come to believe in what a person says based on some kind of reasoning about this person, meaning that we meet a person and they claim to be able to see these things that are way beyond us. We meet a person who says, look, you give away money, you're going to get rich. You be patient with other people, your physical appearance will be beautiful. How do we establish that that's true? It's not something that we can see at our present level of understanding. We have to go try to establish that this person is the kind of person who cannot lie, that this person is a person who will never, ever claim something which is not absolutely true. So first we go about trying to prove that anything that this particular person ever claims must be true. We try to establish that this person is the kind of person, based on other things that they've said, that this person doesn't seem to be a person who can lie to me. This person seems to be a person who always tells the truth. Once you've established them as a person who always tells the truth, then you can have what we call reasonable belief, or a belief based on understanding that this person, what this person says is true. So in the case of karma, that a good action leads to a desirable result, a bad action leads to suffering for us, these kinds of things that are beyond us, we can believe because we believe in the person who said them, because we've deducted or we've established that this person cannot and will not lie to us. So on that basis, we check things with the third check. So the third check is there anything about this, which is very deep, which has been contradicted by a person that I personally know will not tell me a lie. Okay, so even though I can't understand that level of stuff, does it contradict anything that was said by a person that I know can't lie to me, and therefore I am perceiving its truth through reasonable belief based on that this person cannot lie to me. So the third test is, does what this thing says contradict the words of a person that we personally know cannot lie.
What is? That is, I am going to do all the things. 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 꼭 캐내먹어라 누구면 찍대 그래봐 다 중세 꼭 줄 수 있다는 알아서 롱장장하지 이치 지목과 정하라는 줄이 뺏잖아요 하고 두께인지야 지방세마지로 그 지방세마 누구면 찍대 Ta tindri nga rang tu tak che cheba tangi hama owa che sanje chumde nengi sungla yi che che ne tak jo goye gi chema jiwa ro kola shing tu kochu tobi chiba chema si gara o koso sumbi nyugi du me de tene nyugi du na ki kene de maji nyugi mi du na ke di len shu chene sanje chumde nengi sungma re se sanje chumde nengi sungbi sungdi chan da de teso mo kangro chige tene na kena ke ma ne se teso mo kangi nyugi mi du ta ke len shu kore se sanje chumde nengi sungma re se.
So what the Buddha is saying in these lines about the gold and the three tests of the gold, which is burning, cutting, and filing, he's saying, look, it's the same with the three kinds of valid perception, the three kinds of accurate perception that we can talk about. The first is valid perception based on your own direct experience of things. Does it pass that first test, which is mainly your sense powers? Does it pass the test of what you can directly perceive is true with your own senses? Does it pass the test of the second kind of valid perception or accurate perception, which is deduction? Does it make sense? Does it make logical sense? When you examine these words of the Buddha, do they pass the test of being logical? Do they make sense to you? And then finally, does this particular piece of scripture pass the test of being in keeping or in accord with something that has been spoken by a high being whom you personally know, that you've deduced or you've figured out, you've established that this being cannot lie, or will not lie to you, has no reason to, and has no reasonable ever experience of them lying, that you can perceive the truth of an object based on belief, which is founded on the fact that the person who told you that cannot lie. So any particular piece of thing that I say, any particular teaching that I give, says Lord Buddha in this lines, don't believe it just because I said it. I don't want you to believe it just because I said it. Believe it when it passes those three tests of those three kinds of valid perception. Everything above it has been sort of a detailed explanation. I'm just trying to give you the main sense of it with my explanation
here.
Why does Desikapa throw in this piece here? You know, why does he add this piece here about this quotation about the gold? He says Desikapa is thinking that some people might bump into this. They see Desikapa ripping apart what the Buddha said, examining what the Buddha said, questioning what the Buddha said, and they're going to start saying Desikapa is a weirdo. You know, Desikapa is somebody who doesn't believe the Buddha. You know, the Buddha said it. You don't have to rip it up and look into it and question it and stuff like that. And here's Desikapa is being so presumptuous, this weirdo, as to, you know, this is really strange. This guy claims to be a great scholar, and Desikapa is sitting there and questioning, examining, ripping apart what the Buddha said. This guy seems really strange. So Desikapa, knowing that some people might come along thinking that, is sticking in this paragraph to say, look, even Lord Buddha said, look, don't believe everything I said. You have to rip apart what I say. You have to examine what I say. Only believe what makes sense to you. I didn't say it. Lord Buddha said it. So we've finished the general description. Desikapa has introduced you to all the concepts here. First, he's established the need to distinguish between what the Buddha said and he meant what he said, and when did the Buddha say not mean what he said. So he's established that's an important goal to have. Then he's gone into this long explanation of why, how you can establish it, and the need to establish it. If you want to see emptiness directly, you're going to have to make the distinction. You're going to have to be able to decide between the two distinctions. And it's also established that you're going to have to go back to the people who really opened the door of Madhyamika and mind only. The people who started the middle way, the people who got it going in this world, the mind only system and the middle way system. You're going to have to go back to them and examine their words, check their words, study them, and see if you want to learn to see emptiness, you have to make these distinctions. If you want to learn to make these distinctions, you've got to go back to the original sources of mind only and the original sources of Madhyamika. So you have to see how do they explain how to make the distinctions and what distinctions do they make between how do they explain emptiness really, so that you can see emptiness. So everything up to now has been Jetsun Kapa has been making a general presentation explaining the need for learning to distinguish between the figurative and the literal, and then the sources that we have to go back to see the distinction between the figurative and the literal, and the need for us to use our own wisdom to do so and not just to take somebody else's words as being what we should do. Now where should he go? Now he has to branch off into two separate branches, right? He has to go explain how the Madhyamika explain what's literal and figurative and emptiness, and then he has to branch off and explain how the mind-only do it also. So now we've reached the great branch into two great branches. So now he's going to go into finding the scriptural sources for deciding what the Buddha, what is the meaning of figurative, what is literal, and what is figurative, what is what it seems to be, and what is not what it seems to be. And to make those distinctions, we're going to go back to scriptural sources. So the mind-only school goes back to a scriptural source called the True Intent of the Sutras, which is the commentary on the True Intent of the Sutras, which is by the Buddha himself. It's a sutra also. So it's called a commentary. It's not a commentary. It's the Buddha himself in a book called Commentary on the True Intent of What I Said. In there, he explains how the mind-only school explains what is literal and what is figurative. So he's for that, we need an authoritative source for the mind-only presentation. We're going to go to the Buddha's own explanation of what he had in mind when he taught the sutras. So that's going to be the source for the mind-only presentation. Then we're going to go to a Lodrum Sipin, which is the sutra taught with the, what do you call it, limitless wisdom or never-ending wisdom. The sutra and probably referring, he says, I think, to Manjushri, taught by Manjushri, perhaps. So the sutra of never-ending wisdom, Gan says, probably means that Manjushri is asking the Buddha questions, and then being never-ending wisdom, the Manjushri is asking questions of the Buddha. And from there, we will draw the Madhyamika Prasangika explanation of what it means to be literal and what it means to be figurative. So now, for now, we're going to leave the Madhyamika presentation. We're going to get to that later. We're going to isolate the mind-only presentation, and in the mind-only presentation, we're going to talk about what did the book actually say. What book is that? The commentary on the True Intent of the Sutras. I mean, Lord Buddha saying, this is what I meant when I said that. And we're going to take the explanation according to the mind-only school of what it means to be figurative and what it means to be literal from that book. So we're going to treat that first in two steps. First step being, here's what the sutras said. Here's what Lord Buddha said was the meaning of his own sutras. And then here's a big explanation about what he meant when he said that. Okay, so when Lord Buddha himself said, here's what I meant when I spoke those sutras, Jetsun Kapa is going to give you the mind-only school's explanation of what he meant when he said that. And that's the, we're going to get the book and the explanation of the book, two big divisions in the explanation of the mind-only explanation of what's literal and what's figurative. I think I'd like to stop there.
Okay. 도다 신진의 저랑 도도 니키 무슨 말이야? 가르스는 예 잔이 직시에 언제도 꼬치기 도도 직기고 저거 다 대파 직시에 그 도도 직기 아니 안서 제가 지금 말했어 안서 도 도래 이렇게 돼 저라도 도도 직기 니야 도도 직기 되었어 도다 신진 제가 도도 니키 직해 알았어.
Michael is carrying two suitcases. He has to carry on one hand. He has to carry trying to figure out what I'm saying. On the other hand, he has to figure out how to say it to you. Whereas you and me just have to carry one suitcase each, because all I have to do is say what I'm saying, and all you have to do is understand what he's saying. So you only got one suitcase. I only got one suitcase. Poor Los Angeles has two suitcases to carry.
No,
oh yeah. Because of the D or that Beijing and there, and then D or because of this Rimbos shouldn't because of government. Share the money.
Yeah, yeah. 딸이 내셔 들어가면서 진짜 당이 이제 찍다 체가 저거 뒤지를 찍다 체가 들어 뭐지 아니 코네야 까만 주정 마 누구를 가르치는
나랑이
내가 쇼에 주지 찍다 체가 체 본다 찍다 찍다 체가 소리야 아
구분에다 숨는
다 쇼에 구분에 체네 되니 마 주지 체가부터 이미 공부 공부 다 내가 맞지 해야 하나 아니 본다 때로 숨반에 다 시비 체가부터 체 아니 맞지 해야지
So that's the way I said, look, we are really interested in this subject. We spent a lot of money and time to get here. We know how to sit in your class for a long time. Don't just try to make it a short class on our behalf. You know, please go on as long as you can. That you feel, he had TB before, so he has to be careful with himself. But I said, you know, as please go on as long as you can. So I said, okay, from 9 o'clock, oh, 10:30 or whatever, we'll go. And then from 3 o'clock to whatever, we'll go, and we'll do it that way, okay? If that's okay with you guys. I'm an old-fashioned Tibetan. I'm not like you modern Americans. You guys, everything, all the stuff in your stores has a price tag on it, and you just pay whatever the price tag says. But us old-fashioned Tibetans, you know, we get into buying something we like. We start negotiating and arguing with the guy and start trying to talk him down in price. You know, we just spend 15 minutes saying, no, you know, it's got a little scratchy on it. You should pay a little bit less. You should give me less. We start fighting. We know how to haggle. So I'm not going to just buy this scripture here. We're going to haggle over the scripture. So if I get to a word that I want to haggle over, I'm going to haggle. And we'll go on a little bit like that.
Oh, yeah, I'm perfect.
One important thing, when a scripture teacher finishes in the monastery, to preserve their health, to be out of respect for their health, and leave quickly, you know, you make a prostration. When they look like they're done, then you just quickly and cleanly leave, out of respect for their health and their time, because they need time to recover, and they need some peace after that. It's exhausting for them. So you know, when he says that's it, we get up smoothly and cruise out, okay?